Welcome to the Presence Driven Life podcast. I'm Cindy Powell, your host and a fellow pilgrim on the journey to know Jesus and make him known. The world around us has grown increasingly chaotic, but in his presence is fullness of joy. Join me today as we explore what it might look like to live from the beauty and peace of his presence. Hi, everyone. It is Cindy Powell, and we are here with another episode of the Presence Driven Life podcast. And I am so thankful to be sitting here tonight. I said tonight because we're recording at night. I don't know when you'll be listening, but I'm sitting here with Keisha Hatfield. And Keisha was on the podcast several times last year. Just as a reminder, Keisha is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She specializes in complex trauma, and we've had lots of great conversations where her experience and background as a therapist combined with someone who is a lover of Jesus and a lover of his presence has just added a lot of value and insight and revelation to a variety of topics. And one of the ones that was on our heart last year, I went and looked at the date. It was published all the way back in July of last year, was an episode we titled Narrative Over Truth. And a lot of the context of that episode was abuse in the church and how we both felt that the church was in a time of great exposure. That verse that judgment begins in the house of God was probably mentioned. It's come up a lot. It was in response to much that had already been exposed, but we both felt very strongly that there would be more exposed. Keisha and I were talking a little earlier, and you know, at the time, that was an abstract comment. Right now, it's become a very deeply personal reality. That's really what we want to circle back to and talk about today. A lot has happened since that particular episode. Things that you know, that I never had in the realm of possibility in my own mind when I was thinking about abuse in the church. And just to not talk in circles, I'm talking about a lot of what's going on at the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, Missouri. And this has been coming to light since October of last year. So it's not brand new. As of the time we're recording this, it's still ongoing. New allegations are coming out all the time. And it's just been a really difficult situation. Both Keisha and I have very deep personal ties to that particular ministry. So it's no longer abstract, but very, very personal. So anyway, we want to take that on. This is going to be a really raw conversation because this is still something that's very much in process. It's always easy to talk about something when you're coming from a position of resolution and victory. Like, here's what happened. It was awful. And here's what God did. But we're still in the here's what happened and it's awful stage. So while we have great expectation of what God is doing in the process and great expectation of what he will do in the future, it's rough and there's a lot of pain. And as I've mentioned already in the last couple of episodes, what's been on my heart for this season of the podcast, if you want to use that language, is presence-driven perseverance is the phrase I've used. But really, it's like, how do you hold on to Jesus in times of shaking? How do you stay presence driven? How do you stay connected to his heart when there's shaking all over the place, when things that you never thought could happen are happening right in front of your eyes? And so anyway, that's the context of this conversation. Is there anything just on an introductory level, Keisha, that you want to add to that?
I would just second that. Yes, it's very raw. It's very deep. It's very personal. And it's very much happening as we speak. Yes. Going from abstract, mm-hmm. very much inside, and even listening to what we had spoke about last year, mm-hmm. it's very much putting those words into real time and space and action right. and testing, almost like we put those words out there and then they right. were all tested.
Exactly.
They were all put to...
No matter who it is.
No matter who it is, even the person that you would... the most least
yes.
suspect and you most trusted, and how the levels of betrayal that just shock your own grids, all of your own
trust in, mm-hmm. you know, being able to perceive, being able to discern, being able, you know, just so many levels that mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, going back and even thinking too about the whole element of, we talked about having a witness mm-hmm. and bearing witness, and that so often it's difficult. The most difficult bearing witness is your own story.
Right.
The irony.
Right.
The irony that I feel.
We were just being all prophetic and stuff, and here we are.
Right. Right. Because, yeah. And like we had both shared, each of us have had already experiences that we did know about at the time of spiritual abuse. There were already levels that we had walked through, dealt with, experienced, bore witness to. But here we are.
At a whole new level.
At a whole nother, yes. And it's a bearing witness time that we are very much in. Mm-hmm. And so there's just a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. And, you know, as we're talking, I feel like some of you listening may be very familiar with the International House of Prayer. Some of you may think IHOP is for pancakes. And so we want to give some mm-hmm. context. Mm-hmm. Basically, the International House of Prayer is a ministry in Kansas City, Missouri that has been ongoing since the late 1990s and have sustained 24/7 prayer and worship for that entire time, and has had probably the deepest influence on the prayer movement. It's affected mm-hmm. literally the globe. So this is a global ministry. The prayer room is live streamed literally around the world. So this is not a small thing. Mm-hmm. Both Keisha and I have had varying levels of involvement with IHOP over the years. Keisha, much more personal as far as actually she lived there for a while, whereas I would go visit quite a lot. And just the tiniest bit of my personal testimony there is the first time I walked in the prayer room, I just thought for the first time in my life, spiritually, I felt understood. And that I felt like I belonged. And so some of the teaching was things that were so revelatory and so confirming to my heart. In fact, there were different podcasts throughout the year, last year, when we talk about living a presence-driven life. For me, so much of the language for that developed out of that ministry. So very, you know, I'm getting emotional as I'm talking about. That's the problem when you talk about things, when it's so real and it's so raw. There's deep, deep, deep heart ties to this ministry. And it is the director of the ministry, Mike Bickle, who's at the center of the allegations. And again, I'm just going to, speak to the elephant in the room. Both Keisha and I, there's no secrets here that we absolutely 100% have from the beginning believe the allegations to be completely credible and honestly just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. And who knows, by the time this is published, that iceberg may be even more exposed. And those are not things we have any joy in saying. In fact, if you can't hear in my voice, there's deep, deep grief in acknowledging that. But it takes away from the victims in the story to not be very upfront and saying there's very credible evidence. And so, yeah, I just want to be very, you know, so there's not, oh, what do they think? What do they not think? Because there are people still grappling with it. Some things have come out in recent days that have, I think, made the pool of people who don't believe there was wrongdoing much smaller. But there are still those that see with a different lens. And so they are walking their process. But anyway, like I said, I just felt that was important to say as a baseline. That's the perspective we're coming from. That we're deeply grieved that this ministry that spoke so much life to our own hearts and had such a deep role in our own relationships with Jesus has been really corrupted, not the relationship. And that's the thing. That's the distinction we want to make, that the personal time with Jesus was and is real. But so much of the foundation that the ministry itself was built on is sand. Mm-hmm. And the more that comes out, the more apparent it is that it was always built on sand. And I can't speak for anybody else, but that just fries my brain, because it's like, how can so much revelation, so much good,
so much of the presence of Jesus come out of a place that was built on corruption and lies? And how did God allow that? And if y'all have an answer for that, you can send us an email or, you know, fill us in, because, you know, we're still grappling with it. And the bottom line is God allows the wheat to grow with the tares, and the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. People can have very valid, real gifts and choose to use them in ways that are not honoring to God. And yeah, anyway, so when we talk about something coming in so personally like that, how do you make space for the anger, make space for the betrayal, make space for the pain, and yet still make space for the real Jesus? Good question, right?
Yes. I think, honestly, it starts with asking that question. Mm-hmm. I have found that things start to move and flow in whatever it is that's needing to get processed when I ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think I get stuck when I make too many statements. So I've been making, you know, you can kind of like dial into your internal thoughts and what's going on. And, you know, as soon as that becomes something you're more aware of and mm-hmm. conscious to, I started to notice I'm making a lot of statements, like conclusions, end of the sentence, period. Well, this is this, and this is, you know, and so much of, I think, what when there's been so much shaking and so much that's been flipped on its head, mm-hmm. you want to find some kind of clarity and certainty as soon as possible.
Right.
And so you just kind of come out swinging with like all of these statement remarks and trying to like find your balance again and your equilibrium again. And for those of us who were on staff, I lived there for 7 years. I was on staff at IHOP mm-hmm. for 3.5. So about exactly half of that time I was on staff. I was full-time at Exodus Cry, which was an anti-trafficking organization connected to IHOP. It came from the roots of IHOP. Mm-hmm. And then we differentiated at a certain point. However, for that full 7 years, it was a active part
right.
of everyday life. Very much the spiritual community that remains at the center of everything we did. So when something that center to your expression of all things spiritual. Mm-hmm. I mean, prayer, community, worship, teaching, living your life. It's mm-hmm. it's all comprehensive, is now being revealed as something that it was not.
Right.
You're like, okay, was this all a sham? Was this a cult? Was this, you know, all of these statements are coming out. And now you're enraged. Now you're betrayed. Now you're, and everything just kind of has a full stop. And I think sometimes that's how anger is supposed to come out. I just need to be angry, period, end of story. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Just let me have my peace. Let me say what I need to say. Walk away. And then I'll walk back later.
But you know what? That's important, though. It's like, God doesn't deny us our emotions. It's yeah. what do you do with them and where do they lead
yes.
you?
Yes. Well, and I think that's part of knowing the both and, because yeah. it's like, okay, I mean, even that's a phrase that I got from my app. Ironically.
Oh, really? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, where I
didn't
first
know
heard
that's
it.
Maybe say it all the time. I thought I made it up. I'm sure I didn't.
Yeah.
But you
that
know,
was something Mike said a lot. So I'm like, well, oh my gosh. Okay. I know you just start to like pick apart everything, yeah. but it is a both and where I can walk away, but I also know I'm going to come back. And he knows we are irrevocably bound together. And
yeah.
so.
Yeah,
I think this there's security in that. I mean, attachment, if we look through that lens, a secure attachment mm-hmm. means that you can have a rupture mm-hmm. and a repair without anxiety. And
without anxiety about there being an ultimate repair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Without the anxiety of loss
yeah,
of the relationship.
That's good.
You know, it means I can be mad at you. You can be mad at me. We're going to go into our separate space for a second because I need that room, but I know we're always coming back together. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been at least one of the most prominent
pieces for me that brings me peace is the permission to feel all the things that you need to feel, knowing that this is not ultimately threatening my relationship with the Lord. And so part of the coming back together, I think, is adding a question mark to a lot of what has been processed in very absolute statements initially, that then we kind of turn around with like, okay, hold on. Help me understand this better. It's like, you know, you kind of have a blow up and then you start to come down, regulate, reconnect, and then go, okay, help me understand. Help me know I'm able to hear now. I'm able to be present a little bit more. Help me understand. And so I would say that for me, that's a big back and forth. Some days I'll be just like, everything is loud and strong. And there's lots of periods at the end of sentences, or more like exclamation marks at the end of sentences.
Right. I've had a few of those.
All capital letter sentences. And then other days where it's like, okay, Lord, I just need you, like, help me understand this. Like, help or be close to me in this, or come and give me even just a little tiny piece of some type of perspective from you that's going to help hold whatever that question is. You know, I don't know if that's answering fully the question, but I see it as this like dance. It's this kind of like going back and forth. But that with every time we come back together, feel a little bit more centered again on him. There was this one time where I was looking at him as we're having one of these conversations. I mean, I'm seeing so many flying things. Like, it's like I see his face and then I just see pandemonium around him, like just insane amount of movement, storm, tornadoes, vortexes, things just flying in the air. And yet he doesn't flinch. Like, he's just there, not moved at all, looking at me, just looking at me, and is like inviting me to just look at him. Even though in my peripheral vision, I can see everything is flying and it's like nothing's finding its landing spot. It's all still in the air, but he's just looking at me and he's steady. He's unmoved. And he's still the same. Like, he has not changed. There's all these questions around how we could have experienced him in so many ways through an organization and through people who we're now coming to see as so much of this deception, so much of this falsehood and evil that was lurking behind this. And yet, at the same time, he himself is unchanged, and that there is absolutely no darkness in him. And that's where I've been sitting. They're both true. That's where I've been sitting.
Well, and that's where some of the, I guess, the perplexity is for me. It's like there is no surprise to Jesus. He's been in the midst of it from the beginning, which is both comforting and crazy making. Comforting to know that he stands, he doesn't change. Crazy making, you led me here. You know, you led me here. And then just for me, it's the trust issue. My trust in prophetic leaders has not been super strong for a while. And honestly, just in transparency, and I think I've even probably mentioned some things before, but like even with IHOP, as much as I love the prayer room, and it's such a treasured part of my history with God, and I am a house of prayer girl to my core. I've called myself that many, many times. But structurally and teaching wise, sometimes certain things that I've not ever borne witness with fully, and some things that I've had concerns about that have grown over time. But when there is such a sweet sense of his presence in a place, and you have so many sweet memories, so much history, and so much in the teaching that was good and revelatory and life-changing even. Like we said, we use all the language all the time and we don't even know, oh, that's where that came from. It's just been, I feel like I'm talking in circles, but that's kind of been my reality right now. It's like this
this convoluted mixed bag of things that there are these treasures that now are seem to be sitting in a heap of trash. Mm-hmm. And how do you take out the trash mm-hmm. without losing the treasure?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know that I have found a concrete answer for that, except to know that he doesn't change. Mm-hmm. He doesn't change. He's not surprised. And there's no way he doesn't have a way forward. Yeah, I wish I could do better than that as far as somebody asked me in the midst of it, you know, how do you look at the prophetic movement? How do you hold on to, I probably should look up the text because there was one person in particular texting me a really great question, but it had to do with how are you finding a way forward without throwing it all out? And it's rough.
It is.
It's rough. But the one thing I always have said many times about the prophetic, specifically over the last 4 years, because, and we've had many conversations on this podcast about the good, the bad, and the ugly regarding the charismatic church and the prophetic and all of that, because it's going through a rough season, but a necessary refining. But the scripture that's my bedrock in that is that the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And where's the testimony of Jesus? It's not the flesh. It's not the power. It's not the predicting the future. It's the where's the testimony of Jesus? Where is Jesus speaking in it? Mm-hmm. And when it becomes this fluffy thing to tell a narrative, to tell a story, you're losing the testimony of Jesus, and that no longer has any part of my faith or my relationship with him. And I really think, I hope and pray, that we will see a revival of true prophecy that is the testimony of Jesus given in the fear of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have, and again, something we've talked about, but we have created this celebrity Christian culture that celebrates gifting and anointing above character.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to die.
Yep. And I would say with that, I think so much of what allows that just tragic imbalance that creates so much harm and abuse, there is a, I would say, pervasive neglect of emotional wellness.
That's so good, Keisha.
Like profound neglect right. of especially leaders
yeah.
who have sought to meet their emotional needs through their spiritual giftings.
Yeah.
And therefore begin to rely and need it.
Yeah.
They need it. It's yeah. a drug. They need it to be regulated. They need it to mm-hmm. feel satisfied, to feel loved, to feel accepted. You know, all the core needs we have mm-hmm. as emotional beings.
Mm-hmm.
But for so long, emotions in general have been devalued, minimized, seen as less than when it comes to the priorities of what we are meant to be developing and focusing on. The way that everything has been so hyper-spiritualized to talk over
mm-hmm.
the whole emotional wellness conversation
right.
is actually, I would say, one of the core root causes for what allows pervasive narcissism
mm-hmm.
and abuses at those highest levels, because these are ultimately a bunch of leaders who are on an emotional level children,
right?
You know, children. And without accountability, without any kind of structure.
Whole nother topic for another day.
Another one.
Yeah.
But I see it all tied back to a fundamental flaw in how neglectful, especially in the charismatic church, how neglectful they have been to the emotional wellness.
Yeah.
And have made everything about deliverance, about, you know, healing ministries that make it about a wham, bam, snap in your face, mm-hmm. clap around
which
you.
Which we've also talked about.
Which we've yeah. talked about. But that well, is how that they
God
experience.
Can't heal in a moment.
Sure.
But again, it's all about the power encounter. It's yeah. not about the process.
Yeah.
And the relationship. And that's why all these young people or even older people, whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
why people get so damaged.
Yes.
In these kind of situations, because they don't have those roots of relationship, because that is not what they've been taught.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they've been taught to serve the vision,
not to find the heart of Jesus. And what's so ironic about IHOP is finding the heart of Jesus was such a core message mm-hmm. in what was spoken, mm-hmm. but it is not what was modeled.
No.
And that's where the disconnect.
Yes.
And I just, we talked about this earlier because I said one of the things that just sort of sums up what's going on right now is an event that happened not too long ago at IHOP. And again, the whole thing, the whole vision is 24/7 prayer, right? You keep the fire burning on the altar. Well, they had a bomb scare or a bomb threat, I guess, not a bomb scare, a bomb threat in the prayer room. And so they evacuated the prayer room except for the worship team because they had to keep the fire burning. Talk about not modeling emotional wellness. You know, what's the priority? The vision, the brand, the narrative, not the people. And that's the pervasive theme. It's keep that fire burning right. at all costs, no matter what it costs you emotionally, physically, spiritually. Mm-hmm. Keep that fire burning because that's the brand.
And that ultimately we can see now that quote unquote mandate to keep the fire burning, which was always presented as unto honoring Jesus, unto right.
well,
him coming back.
Yeah.
Unto, you know, this is all unto what we believe is loving him. The sense of the mandate, keeping it and being faithful to it is equated with
right.
faithfulness to him. So I can speak to even being there. The idea, like I can go back into my brain during those years and I can imagine there being something like that, a bomb threat. I can imagine this mentality of when you're there and how close that is related mm-hmm. to this is me loving Jesus.
Right.
This is me being willing to put my life onto something that if it means that much to him, I'll put my life on it.
Right.
And if I'm told this is what means that much to mm-hmm. him, I love him to the death. I mean, right. that's what we sing. That's what we say.
another motto.
That's, yeah, it's ingrained. Right. It is ingrained. And I, to be
and
honest
there's reality
with you,
in all of these things. That's the problem. If there wasn't truth
for
and
sure.
if there wasn't a root of truth and reality, none of us would ever have bought
for sure.
it.
Yeah. But to say that not that many years ago, had I been there and there was a bomb,
you would have stayed.
It would have made sense to me to stay.
Right.
It would have been, this is me loving Jesus.
Right.
So I get it. I have only compassion and love people who are there.
Right.
Who, because I get it. It's like this idea that this mandate is intricately bound to his heart. You're like, oh, I will defend it. I will go to the ends for it. And yet now we see this mandate is about the control of one man.
Right.
It's actually not been about that.
It's never been about Jesus.
So this loyalty to the vision over people is actually about one man having control.
Right.
That's what this actually is. And that's what people are just now slowly coming to see and accept. Because for so long, we have believed with everything. Mm-hmm. It's not just about being religious or being rigid or being like, I would never have considered myself any of those.
Of course.
But being there, it's like, no, this matters to him. This is precious to him. This is sacred to him. Even if nobody else gets it, even mm-hmm. if this is very, very bizarre, maybe to somebody on the outside, to me, I see this as so, so, so precious to God, and whatever is precious to him is precious to me. It's as simple as that for
right.
me. And I never really put it to Mike.
Right.
It really was for me. It was never about keeping something because he kept something.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think about it now. It's funny how you can just see things once your eyes are open mm-hmm. and you realize it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know, when the curtain is pulled back. Like, oh. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't take away the fact that for you, for me, for countless others, mm-hmm. it was all about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that's so hard to reconcile. It's like, yeah, I can look at it now and say, well, duh, of course you evacuate mm-hmm. everybody because you don't want them to die, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
But yet they're in their very sincere mm-hmm. hearts are like, we're going to stay for the mm-hmm. cause, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, how did it become this?
Yeah.
For me and for so many others, it's like you mentioned at the beginning, we've had our experiences with controlling churches and abuse in churches. And it's like, how do you keep going down the same road?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's like, I don't know that we're smart enough not to, but I think God's had just about enough. That's my personal thought, that he's helping us out a little bit with an expediting of the exposure of the mm-hmm. things we've bought into and that we've believed so that we can come back to a more pure gospel. Yeah. Is Jesus worthy of 24/7 worship? Of course. Of course. But there are manifestations of that that don't involve.
Never at that cost.
Exactly.
Never.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think for one place or for one man to mm-hmm. believe that it is up to them
right.
to sustain that is never okay.
Well, and then to take that burden and put it on people. Yeah. And there's such a... It doesn't seem subtle right now, but I know when you're in it, it's just such a subtle control in that it's passed on then to the worship leader, to the prayer person, to the person even reading their Bible there in the prayer room. It's because the role of your personal faithfulness is so emphasized mm-hmm. that if you don't do your part, mm-hmm. Israel won't be saved. Mm-hmm. If you don't do your part, it will delay Jesus's coming. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these weighty things when you kind of talk about it like this, I mean, somebody who's like a non-believer would probably listen to us and think you people are high.
Of course.
You know, because it sounds so crazy.
Yeah.
You know, we know that these things have a biblical core. That's mm-hmm. the thing. If they were just complete outright lies, nobody mm-hmm. would ever buy it. It taps into something. And mm-hmm. first of all, our desire to love him and please him and worship him. Mm-hmm. But even more, I think we have this innate desire to be a part of something. Mike had a really great ability to make mundane things seem very important in the kingdom. Yes. Oh, yeah. And you know, the thing is, again, this is the rub, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful that he could point that out.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this twisted thing that happens when it becomes religious.
Well, and I think too, because there was such an emphasis on special revelation and special knowledge when it comes to even like the expression of 24/7 prayer, that's not normal. You know, that's not what most people do full time for right. their job.
Intercessory.
That was literally on my business card.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
See, I always had a problem with that particular.
Oh, yes. It was three-parter. It was like abolitionist, and mm-hmm. I was an intercessory missionary and a therapist. A three-parter. That was a full-time part mm-hmm. of my, I mean, I was in that prayer room right. 12 hours minimum a week on top of a 40-hour job.
Right. Well, so, again, emotional wellness, not so much.
No. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a glamorization of that.
Yes.
In the way
and
that
the sacrifice,
culture,
yeah.
even though so much of the day-to-day feels mundane, the overall feeling is mm-hmm. we're set apart, we're different, we're doing something yes. extraordinary. We're doing something so different. And so you feel special, which is a core facet of narcissism. And so there's almost this kind of
cults.
Because there's almost this way now where I can see he took so much of his own narcissism and just shared it in this way of like, oh, come be like me. So I don't look so self-aggrandizing. Everyone can share in that. Everyone can feel extra important and put that on your business card. That was not my idea, by the way. that was asked of me. That was only the first year too. I'll just clarify.
I don't think I ever got one of those cards.
You know, I was very proud of it for like the first year. I'm like, because again, it was like, oh, what a cool combination.
Yeah.
Because my dream, just on a personal level, before I even had language for any of that, my dream was being able to take something in the clinical world and combine it with a spiritual community that values prayer, that values worship, that has a culture that can bring those two things together, that values justice, where we're not so focused on just one thing here or one thing there, or we're not necessarily strapped down by religion. Because that's the that's the irony. I felt so free of religion in this environment. I felt so, oh, this is beyond anything that I've ever had a taste of. And so I loved that therapist and intercession could be on the same card, you know, and abolitionist. It's like prayer, justice, clinical, you know, it's all coming together. That was my dream. So it's like it makes complete perfect sense how to me it all just connected and it made sense. And I think there is something truly kingdom at the heart of that. It's like, of course, God wants to see all of these spheres interconnect.
Right.
So there's truth. And yet the presentation of that, the structure of that, what that was actually built on in this case had massive, massive foundational issues from the beginning. And yet there was something that I think, despite that, that God and all the mysterious questions that we still have.
Right.
Is so determined to like do what he wants to do on the earth. And all these people who are gathering in one place who were genuine,
right.
who are hungry. I mean, where hunger is, he's right. there.
Right.
And so you have all these like corrupt underlying layers to the building. And yet you have all these innocent, hungry people gathered crying out to him. He's not going to respond
right.
and move and release his spirit. And so just this inner workings of like all this delay of justice combined with all of this that he poured out and did in real time. I could go on several different stories of things that to this day, I mean, I will never question the right. glory. I will never question like the right. healing that I witnessed with my own eyes for 7 years. There's so many stories of what God had done. Again, it's the both and.
Well, and that is the thing. Anything that he was truly involved in is eternal.
Yeah.
And end of story.
Right.
That was the thing I think that's the hardest for me. Why I was so enamored with the 24/7 aspect of the prayer room is that to me, it was the eternal song.
Yes.
It was entering into something that has gone on for eternity past mm-hmm. and will continue in for eternity, future. And that, again, that's where it's hard for me to reconcile. I mean, I know in my heart, and I can also know intellectually how much was in fact real. But that's where it's so hard to reconcile how much was so corrupted. And I think that's been what's so difficult for so many people. And sadly, because of the way things were handled, and I'm going to lay most of that just squarely on Mike. Anyway, he handled things in a way that I think from the beginning sought to divide.
Mm-hmm.
And it has. And it's been horrific. And that's been like the extra carnage in the whole process is there's so many people that have turned against each other mm-hmm. and made accusations against each other. Because of this, because of, you know, you have this group that are seen from the outside and people who are still on the inside. And obviously, there are facts of the perspective that, you know, you're going to see differently from different positions. I can relate better to the perspective I have, obviously, which is that of one from the outside looking in. Whereas even though it was devastating and I didn't want it to be true because of things I had already observed, because of things that were already checks in my spirit, and because of, I don't know, it feels like maybe a little bunny trail, but because I'm already have my mouth open, I'm going to finish the thought. But Mike preached a sermon his last time in the pulpit, specifically, prophetically declaring that he was going to be betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that to me said he is 100% guilty, because that is such a classic narcissist thing to do, where you go and you become the victim, you flip the narrative. And in doing that, he divided the body from something that was already going to be devastating. It became that much more devastating because you have people that believed that narrative. And then other people that are like, for me, it was such a wake up call.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if I had doubts when I found out about that, and I couldn't even bring myself to listen to the whole thing, but I knew enough of it and saw enough of it that it's like that chased every doubt away, which was very sad. But the reason I went down that train of thought is so many of the people that are now very vocally making statements against Mike, and not statements against him, I mean, but calling out what he's done.
Yeah,
accusations are flying all over the place that there's some ulterior motive, that there's... It's like, no, people are heartbroken. There is absolutely zero pleasure in this. Yeah. These are people that ministry meant everything. And it meant everything to their relationship with Jesus. And it's because of that, that there needs to be justice. Yeah. To preserve what was good, if that makes any sense. That was a very long way of getting to that point. Anyway, here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that's coming to my mind that I feel like is going to be a manifestation of justice for people, both former and present IHOPers, and really everyone connected to the prayer movement that I think in some way, whether Kansas City or wherever their prayer room is, that has been so impacted by the system and the model that IHOPKC has established, that puts so much emphasis on the 24/7, that puts so much emphasis on the model, the structure, the vision, the mandate at the expense of the people. And then you see the kind of fallout. I think part of the justice and what I have felt the Lord moving on over, even before all this, just in my years having left IHOP, has been this redefinition of the word wholehearted, which is a word that is used very prominently at IHOP, of the wholehearted lifestyle is what we presented as. And how that was defined was, you give everything. You give everything. How abandoned will you let me be?
Right.
How far will you let me go? This is the cry of every heart in that room. And it's defined as pouring yourself out at the altar, pouring yourself out into the ministry, pouring yourself out in this place, going above and beyond what even physically feels possible, because the mandate's so much bigger than me.
Right.
Because I want to be part of something that's so much bigger than me. So I'm literally becoming less and less and less me. And I'm becoming more and more part of this bigger thing. And then you start to just very slowly and yet very assuredly losing touch with all these other parts of who you are.
Yeah.
And going back to emotional wellness, relational wellness, social. I mean, just so many different elements that I'm thankful for during my time, because I was part of more of an outside group while being inside very much. That I feel like I was tethered in some ways, more deep relationships, deep community.
Yeah,
deep.
Exactly.
I mean, I am very thankful, very blessed that I had that.
Yeah.
But I see so many in that community who did not have that and were really pushed to make this everything. I mean, hearing sermons saying, you know, hey, don't be letting friends or family try to guilt you into feeling bad for coming to the prayer room on a Friday and Saturday night instead of going out with them, and saying, hey, you're being religious. Don't let them guilt you into that. What you're doing is glorious. What you're doing is noble. It will be remembered forever. And that's just putting it lightly. I mean, it would be built up as you sacrificing your weekends, you sacrificing your time with your family, you sacrificing a trip you want to go take, you know, making memories with, you know, this group over here, you sacrificing these very quote unquote temporal moments of earth for an eternal reward, an eternal memory book that Jesus is keeping track of every single prayer you're saying on this Friday night that you just gave up spending, you know, out with other people. But you now being by yourself, isolated in a prayer room is going to matter to Jesus forever.
Right.
And it's like, goodness, because again, going back to like, well, but there's truth.
Right.
There's some truth in there where it's like, hey, there have been times, sure, where it's I heard directly from the Lord say, hey, come away with me.
Right.
Let's not go do this thing tonight. Let's just go to the prayer room and pray and seek my heart and be still. There's going to be something better for you in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's
other nights where it's like, go have fun.
Right.
Go be with your people. Go have community. Go be in the presence of other people. Go listen to people with different perspectives and different environments that gets you out of one place. Like, we're made for all of it.
Right.
And so the wholehearted definition for me has been blown up. Mm-hmm. And it's always been something that's bothered me on some level of I'm going, I know there's more than what this is, but I feel like I've come into touch firsthand with like, oh, so many parts of the self have had to live in these corners and be kind of like pushed away and pushed to the side because so much is demanded of you, mm-hmm. especially like just such a high intense environments to maintain spiritually, to be revving yourself up again and again and again and again and again, getting on board with the mission, getting on board with the mandate. And then, of course, for me, also, it was, you know, working in an anti-trafficking organization where the adrenaline is always up. We are always going.
Just a little.
Cindy's been a witness.
I witnessed that adrenaline.
My lifestyle was at 100 all the time. The adrenaline was constant. And so that costs you. Mm-hmm. That costs different areas of your life. I think that what's important to Jesus, what I'm feeling his eyes on in all of this, is how zealous he is for us as human beings to have our whole selves
be whole, yeah,
to be made whole in his eyes,
right,
how he defines it. And then from that place of us being restored to our wholeness, love him from that place, which is going to look like 1,000 different things,
exactly,
not one.
Exactly.
So that's a piece of justice I'm looking at.
So obviously, Keisha and I have a lot to say about this topic, and our conversation went on a little longer than what would comfortably fit into one episode. So we're going to leave this episode right here and then join us next week where we will pick up the conversation at this point. Have a great week and we'll see you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you would also consider leaving a rating or review, it really helps other people find us. The Presence Driven Life podcast is a ministry of the Arising Global. If you would like to find out more about The Arising or would like to support this podcast, please visit thearisingglobal.com. Have a great week living out of the abundance of His presence.